I just want to go through a very simple, beautiful idea about Hanukkah. We have a song, Moz Tzur, and in this song we talk about the Greeks. Yevanim nikbetzu alai. The Greeks gathered upon me. Azai bimei chashmanim, in those days of the chashmanim. Ufartzu chomot migdalai, the chashmonaim, they went ahead and they broke the walls of my towers. Vitim'u kol hashmanim, and they defiled all my oils. All the oils, u'minotarkan kanim nasanes l'shoshanim, b'nei bina, meishmona kavu shiran anim, and then there was a miracle. Again, one more time. The Greeks gathered upon me in the days of the chashmonaim, and they broke the walls of my towers and defiled the oil. Most of us understand the story to be that they went into the Beis HaMikdash, they destroyed things, and it happened to be that oil broke and oil got defiled. It became tummy. However, that would be a very different word. And instead of saying it the way it does, Vitimu kol hashmanim, the oils were actively defiled because they defiled them. The word would be v'nitme'u, they became tameh. It happened to be. It was a byproduct of ransacking Beis HaMikdash, pillaging, destroying, and in the destruction and the mess, and Greeks walking over the whole place, they touch and ruin, and the oil is defiled. But that, Rabosei, is not what it says. What does it say? Not v'nitme'u kol hashmanim, the oil became impure, but v'timu'u kol hashmanim. Let me demonstrate what v'timu means. The Greeks walk in, or march in, and they're like, oil! Timo, they're running around. Gotcha. You're it. You're Tommy. Tommy. What in the? That's what it means. It does not mean the nitmeu. That would be a different word, a different concept. And if you don't think that might be pshat, if you think I'm reading into this maybe a little too much, the Mishnayot actually tell us ufartzu chomot migdalai. They broke the walls of my towers. Most of us would understand. What does that mean? They broke down the walls of the Beis HaMikdash, right? No. Comes the Mishnayot and tells us like this, that there was a sign on the Beis HaMikdash wall that says, Ad Kan Lizarim. Non-Jews are not allowed to walk past this point. The Greeks shot up that sign 13 times. They made 13 holes in the sign, in the soreg, in the fence, disallowing non-Jews to pass that point. And the Mishnah says, and that is the pritzot shepartzu hayevanim. Ufartzu chomot migdalai means they shot up the sign. Take that, you sign. We showed you. And we'll defile your oils also. Get that. You gotta be kidding. That's the story of the Yevanim? There's a fascinating Mishnah that brings down a debate between the Hellenized Jews and the Prussian. And the Hellenized Jews, the Mityavnim, they go over to the Jewish rabbis and they say, you know, could you explain to us the difference between camel bones, which do not become tameh. When the camel is dead and leaves its bones behind, they don't contract tumah, and they don't give off tumah. But when a person dies, it does contract and give tumah. Could you explain that? So the rabbi said, sure, we could explain it. One thing God loves dearly, it has tumah. The other is not as beloved, and it's not as kadosh, so it doesn't have that tumah. And I want to explain what's going on here. You see, there was once my wife and I were driving in Manhattan on a Thursday afternoon, and that wonderful moment when the good old car, you know, the one when you get engaged, I guess you don't know this yet, but this will probably happen to some of you, and the parents or in-laws say very generously, we want to help you in your marriage. And therefore, we're going to give you this rent-a-wreck, which hasn't started in about 5 years. You can have it. It's yours. Like, that's really so nice. That's what we've needed. So we were driving this rent-a-wreck, and lo and behold, it had that fateful moment in the middle of Manhattan, and it broke down. Would you believe? I couldn't believe it. It was only the 10th time. There was one time that it just broke down going up Hilltop Lane in Muncie. It was on a hill, and we stopped for the light. That's what you do in the United States. You stop at the red lights. And then when it turned green, well, it didn't start anymore because the gas had gone to the bottom of the tank. So we had to push it over the hill. So my wife and I pushed. We got a few others to help us. When we got to the landing on College Avenue, so then all of a sudden the gas was able to go back and we were able to drive again. So this was a great, great car. They don't make them the way they used to. They make them better, Baruch Hashem. So there we were in Manhattan on a Thursday afternoon. Just at about, when the shops closed, at about 5 o'clock, it was about 5:01, the car died. Fantastic. This is a great moment. And that's when we met Jose. Jose is a great buddy. And we became close. And Jose tells us that he can have it fixed by tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Like, Jose, we're buds by now. But I mean, we went into the tow truck. He took us to the shop. It was after hours. It was a fantastic time hanging with Jose. But I was like, Jose, that's too late. 7 p.m. tomorrow night. That's Friday night. That's too late. He's like, oh, yeah, you got Friday night parties? Yeah, yeah, Friday night parties. It's kind of like that. It's like, you know what? For you guys, I'm going to do a special. I will really rush. I'll stay up now. And 5 o'clock tomorrow, it can totally be ready. I'm like, Sabbath? 5, 7? We're not making it back in time to that. No, Jose, it's still not going to work. It's like, what's wrong with that? That's the best. What exactly do you have in mind here? Your car broke down. It's after hours. What exactly are you thinking? So I'm like, listen, we've got Sabbath. So now I've got me and Jose and my wife. We're talking about the Sabbath. And he's like, right. So with Sabbath and all, you're just going to get in your car at 5 p.m. and drive over. That's the problem, Jose. You see, that can't happen because Sabbath is at about 5:20. We drive off right into the Sabbath. And what's going to happen at 5:20? Well, and that's when it dawned on me, like, he don't get it. Well, you know, the sun sets, right? Mm-hmm. And then it dawned on me, I'm Jewish. And people outside of the Jewish world don't think like me. They don't understand that something actually changes at 5:20 at sunset. It's a whole different world. No, that's now the Sabbath. He understands holidays. He understands family gatherings. But what he doesn't understand is, so why, therefore, do you turn into a pumpkin at 5:20 exactly? Like, what transpired in that moment? So you'll be a half hour late. I had the great privilege of Elizabeth, New Jersey. They were zocha to the first Dunkin' Donuts that became kosher. First kosher Dunkin' Donuts in the United States was in Elizabeth, New Jersey. I don't know how many of you knew that, but that took place approximately 20 years ago, 19, 20 years ago. And it was a great moment, and I had the great privilege to for the first Shabbaton as an advisor and having a car and a license that I was going to drive down the entire turnpike without my parents. Now, this was like a two-hour drive and four NCSYers in the back. They gave me that puppy look. We got to stop at Elizabeth, New Jersey. We're going to pass right by to not go to Dunkin' Donuts? Like, it can't be. That's like going to Jerusalem and never hearing about marzipan. It's like, it just doesn't go. It's like, okay, fine. I guess we will. Well, we overstayed our welcome at Dunkin' Donuts. Actually, I just got lost in Elizabeth, New Jersey. It's before the days of GPS. And we got really close to Deal, New Jersey, where the Shabbaton was. Really close, just 4 miles away when the sun set. So, yes, we parked and walked. We got there just a little bit late. But what happens? What happens is something called Kedusha, holiness. And that is the point that the Yevanim don't get. I can understand a library is a place where you're quiet. That's common decency for the other people trying to study. It's a place of books, a place of learning, and you're quiet. But if, let's say, no one is in the library, and the librarians leave you all by yourself, could you all of a sudden break out in a dance? Could you all of a sudden let yourself go, hey, I'm free. It's just me in the library. I don't have this need to be quiet for the next person. I could do what I want. You could do the Kuna Matata in the library. And then the next day, it goes on the news because they caught you on video. All right? What they don't understand is, in the Beis HaMikdash, the non-Jew can't go. I understand. It's a place of study. You don't have a place to study? But why can't a non-Jew go? I understand that a Beis HaMikdash is a place where you keep your Jewish books. But it's actually prohibited to talk about anything other than Torah or Tefillah in a Beis HaMikdash. People don't realize this, but we were at the Kotel the other night. I don't know if everybody understands this. That is the holiest shul, one of the holiest shuls that we have today in the world. That's the best we have. You cannot talk about anything other than Torah or Tefillah in a shul, let alone the holiest shul. You don't want to be putting your back to the wall. You don't want to be talking to your friend on the phone. You don't want to be talking to each other about sports or other things, or where we're going, which restaurant. It's a shul, and it's the holiest shul. You're not a tourist that's just there for pictures. It's a shul. It's a sanctuary. It's been sanctified as that. That's where the Jewish message comes in. There is something called Tumah. There's something called Kedusha. Tumah is a prototypical Jewish concept. That thing, it's defiled. It's impure. Somebody touched it that couldn't touch. Somebody moved it, and it's now got tumah dripping all over it. It's tummy. What's wrong with it? Eat it. Enjoy it. What's got? That's where the Greeks come along, and they say, that's not true. That doesn't exist. That's voodoo stuff. We are an advanced, progressive society. We'll tell you, that's not. That's just fictitious. You're making it up. And you know what? All of us run into that very same thought and very same problem. How do I know? Because every time you take your 3 steps forward and your mouth goes and you find yourself daydreaming, it's because you are, right then, the Yevanim. Nobody's there. Who am I talking to? Hello? McFly? It's just you! You're like, what? And that's why you don't daven seriously. Because, first of all, everyone next to you, when you shut your eyes and start taking it seriously, they're going to think you're crazy. But you know what the worst is? You're going to think you're crazy. Yeah. Oh man, not you, buddy. Oh, what are you doing? There's no one there. Who are you talking to? And that is the battle between the Greeks and the Jews. Is it real? Is it not real? Is anyone there or not? And comes the Jew and says, Kadosh Baruch Hu is real. It's only hard to contemplate if he's not there. But if he's there and you light that candle and you say, Rabosai, the way the Greeks lost, the way that the Chashmonaim lost to the Maccabees, is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there. It's impossible that the Jewish people made it through the desert for 40 years. It's impossible the Jewish people conquered the Canaanite nations. But it happened. And I'm going to end with a story, as I'm inclined to do. Story is one about an English poetry reading contest. The English people, that's how they really knock themselves out. And the song, the piece of poetry that they so chose was Psalm, a parak of Tehillim. The Lord is my sheep, Hashem roi lo achzar, bin ot desha, yarbitzeni al mei menuchot yinaleni mizmor le David. We sing it at Shal Shudas, some of us know it. And all sorts of people were going up and giving it a shot. It's a non-Jewish poetry reading contest. A lot of non-Jews, everyone's there. And one guy gets up, another guy gets up, another guy. One guy gets up, a young fella, charismatic, knows how to control the audience. He reads it professionally. It was a masterpiece. He blew the audience away. Everyone erupted in applause. The place was just enamored with this guy. Unbelievable reading. Clearly is going to win. Well, they finish going through all the other readers, and at the very end, the judges are now going through all the contestants. And they're tallying up, really just as a perfunctory act. They all know it was that young, very ambitious guy. He's definitely going to win. And a Jewish fellow, a rabbi, he approaches the bench, the judges, the panel, says, judges, may I have a go? You guys are busy judging anyway. I didn't sign up to be a contestant. I don't really want to be, but I saw it was that psalm. I'm familiar with it. May I have a go? They did have some time to kill anyway. And British people at least have to show a front of being polite. So, sure, okay. And this guy gets up and you still, you know, the Schoenstein is still right there from last week. And the scraggly beard, all disheveled, and he gets up. And everybody's like, what? Who let this guy up there? And then he starts. Song from David. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. And the way he reads it, it's with such emotion and feeling. Very quickly the audience starts to hush and really listen in. And all of a sudden you start to see people that are moved and they're inspired. And some people start crying. And he walks off the stage when he's finished. The guy, the charismatic fella, maybe we could just hold off on the tally for just one moment. Just one moment for the end. So the charismatic fella, he runs up to the rabbi. Rabbi, that was incredible. You're the winner. Take it. You're going to win. I want you. So I wasn't a contestant. I'm not trying out. I'm leaving. You did such a masterful reading. It's going to be yours. And at that point, the judges get up on stage. They announce the winner. Of course, it was that young man. And the place erupts in cheers, and they start running after him to throw him up and put him on their shoulders. And he is running after the rabbi. Rabbi, rabbi, wait! And he says, explain to me one thing. I just don't get one point. When I read it, everyone erupted in cheers and applauded. But when you read it, Rabbi, people were crying. Well, what'd you do? How'd you read it that way? That got the audience to respond that way. He said, well, it's very simple. You read a piece of poetry that's really amazing. And you read it like a master. About a God. About a man who wants and longs for that God. But my friend, that's a God that I talk to every day. That's a God that I long for all the time. And I know him personally. That's my father. And so when I read it, it was a different story. Rabosai, some of us, we were on Har HaZeitim, looking at the place that should be Har HaBayit of the Beit HaMikdash. And we were at the Kotel, and we saw the stones, the aged stones, with the wrinkled appearance of old age, of tears that have fallen down on those rocks, yearning for Am Yisrael to come back, waiting just to pray there. And so many of us, Vayifka b'makom, could bump into the place and still don't see anything. It could be a foreign God, a foreign father, like this young fella, maybe charismatic, very capable in life, but doesn't know God or spirituality or Kedusha if it hits us in the face. And when we're ready and prepared, that we have the opportunity to say the most powerful Shemona Esrei, take those three steps forward, it can, here it is. Here's Kedusha. It's yours. It's ours. We don't necessarily all grab that opportunity. This is the celebration of Hanukkah. Light those candles. Pray that prayer. Make it real. Because Kedusha is a Jewish reality for us to bring to the world that God does truly exist and listens to every one of us. Hanukkah Sameach. Let's daven Arav. Let's learn strong tonight. There's a lot of challah. Let's learn through the night.